All right, so today's date is June 4th, 2015, and I am Deborah Schwartz, the Mill Valley Historical Society representative for the Oral History Program, and I'm sitting here with Rob Moitoza. Hi, Rob.
Hi.
It's so nice of you to give us your time.
For sure.
So, Rob, you are a Mill Valley homeboy, right? Why don't you tell me, if you will, we'll open with just a little background history about you and your family. And if you could be as specific as you can with times and names, it would be most appreciated.
Okay.
So first, let's start a little with your background information about your family, your parents, if you would.
Well, let's see. My mom and dad moved up here in 1959. Bulldozed a lot out and made
So,
their
Rob,
house
you're
here.
talking about specifically where we're sitting right now in our recording is, as fate would have it, is my home, which happens to be your home that was built by your parents here in Mill Valley on Blythedale Ridge.
Pretty amazing.
Kind of a coincidence for those that are
Very
listening.
amazing.
Yes. So your father and mother, where were they born before they came here up onto the mountain?
Mom was born in Oakland and Dad was born in Pinole.
And your mom's name, full name was?
Evelyn DeWolf Moitoza.
And your
And
father's name?
it was Frank Garcia Moitoza. And his grandfather was, or his father was from Portugal, from the Azores Islands. So we had the Portuguese side and the kind of European. Mom was, Irish, English, kind of the mix of European. And I've been exploring my Portuguese roots lately, which is pretty interesting. Found out I had relatives that I never even knew about and stuff. So that's kind of interesting.
There were a lot of Portuguese here in Mill Valley. They came to, as dairy farmers, correct? Is that when your family came over here? The
They
1800s?
came. I'm not sure exactly why my grandfather came here, because that side of my family was so they didn't share anything. It was very hard to get any info, because I found I have relatives around that I never met and stuff, But yeah, it was an interesting family. Someday I hope to go to the Azores and study some. But one interesting thing I found out, though, I was looking at some old pictures from Pinole, which is where my father was born and where my grandfather lived. And my grandfather had a big blacksmith shop there and stuff. And I guess Moitozas were pretty well known in that area in Pinole.
Where is Pinole exactly?
It's over just north of Richmond and Oakland area. And so I'm looking through the pictures and I see this old Model T Ford, with my grandfather's brother. And another guy named Frank Mello. And I went, well, one of my best friends in Seattle was named Frank Mello. And I said, I wonder if he's related. So I sent this picture to my friend Frank, and he said, that's my grandfather. So my grandfather and his grandfather were best friends of one of my best friends now, and we never put that together until we started researching. Is that weird or not?
Yeah. Could have been a long lost brother for all we know.
Yeah.
So your dad was born in Pinole, what year approximately?
1901, I want to say, yeah.
And your mom around the same time?
Later, yeah, she was 10 years later, so yeah, 19, yeah. So, yeah.
So, as far as your association to Marin County, how did your family make their way over here?
Well, let's see. My grandfather moved to Tiburon then, which I'm not sure why he moved to Tiburon, but he was a blacksmith, and there was a railroad down in Tiburon. And he may have been down in the, I know he worked down in that railroad. And maybe he moved because of the work. I'm not sure. I also know I think they lost a lot of property over there when they built some roads or something
In
in there.
Pinal.
Yeah. So he may have decided to just get out of there, you know. I'm not sure. But anyway, he moved to Tiburon, and that's where my dad grew up.
What part of
So,
Tiburon?
right up on the hill by, there's an old church there, St. Hilary's Church. And at that time, my grandfather's house was the only house on that hillside. Just that.
Before the church?
I think the church might have been there. But that was the only building there. So we have pictures where it was just my grandfather's house and St. Hilary's, and that's it. Nothing else on that whole hillside. And now it's like wall-to-wall mansions that are, you know, millions of dollars each.
So this would have been what year?
Oh gosh. I'd
You don't
have to
have to be
look up the
exact,
I'll
but.
have I have all those dates. So if you're interested, I can give you some of that information a little more
It just
precisely.
helps put things in context to the
Yeah,
building and all that,
yeah.
so.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
we're guessing somewhere in the early 1900s.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
So
but
you're
then
here.
now why my dad moved to Mill Valley, I'm not real sure why. He just liked the area, you know, liked the mountain and liked the area. And he worked in San Francisco. So the beauty of this area of Mill Valley and this area is it's still kind of a country town in a way, but it's 20 minutes away from San Francisco, you know what I mean? So it's almost the best of both worlds in a way. You have access to the big city, but you're, you know, basically living in a more of a country area.
Your father was a photographer, wasn't he? Or it was his
He
hobby?
took pictures of the Golden Gate Bridge when it was being constructed. He was a photographer for Roebling Steel, so he had all these pictures of the Golden Gate Bridge construction. But his main job was later on was he was the head of a voluntary union in San Francisco, San Francisco Federation of Municipal Employees. And it was, you know, police, firemen, teachers, various, you know, public workers.
Did he go to school here in the area?
I went to TAM,
But did your dad go to school here?
yeah.
Or in Pinal?
Yeah, he went to TAM, BISI.
He did?
Yeah. He was a track star, and he used to, and he held the pole vaulting record for a while way back then. So he was a real athlete.
Now, before we get off the topic of his photography, as I recall hearing, he took some pretty popular photos or photos that are iconoclastic to the building of the bridges, the
Yeah.
span coming together.
Yeah.
Is that the photo that we all see so frequently of the bridge span?
It's possible there were two or three photographers. There was one for Roebling Steel, there was one for the bridge, Golden Gate Bridge District itself or something, and but my dad took some pictures probably that nobody else has, so yeah,
So
he took.
you grew up, your folks carved out this piece of property right here where we're
Yeah, yeah,
sitting
yeah.
and built their homes in the 50s.
Yeah, because my dad said he wanted to live on a hill, you know, but he didn't, but he wanted to be on the flat. He didn't want to have any more than two steps to get into his house. So that was his.
Good thinking.
And in those days, you could afford to bulldoze out. Now it would cost you a fortune,
Well, could you
probably.
even?
I don't know.
I doubt it.
The environmental thing, they might not let you do that. You know? I don't know.
Yeah. It certainly is a beautiful place.
Yeah.
They've created for himself a lovely perch.
Yeah.
So were you, you came to, family came to live in this house and then commenced your...
Well, actually, when we moved to Mill Valley originally, we lived down on East Flatdale, mm-hmm. 74 East Flatdale. My mom and dad lived above, there was a donut shop there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right across from where the post office was, which is now something else. I don't know.
Sunnyside?
And there was a donut shop. So we lived right over the donut shop where you smelled those donuts all the time drifting.
Do you like donuts?
Yeah, sure.
And it's you and your two sisters, Fran and Sue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then we moved up here. I was 9 years old when we moved up here. Mm-hmm. So that means Sue was 5 and Fran was 7 when we moved up here.
So tell me a little bit about your experience growing up here in Mill Valley, if you would.
Well, gee, where do I start? I just remember some of the people and stuff, you know, and I remember being. It's you're kind of isolated up here on the mm-hmm. hillside.
Mm-hmm.
Which had its pros and cons, you know, because it's a ways for kids to walk if you wanted to walk all the way down that hill, mm-hmm. hillside, you know. But it was peaceful and quiet and sunny and, you know, nice at the same time, you know.
Which primary school did you go to?
Let's see, Old Mill School,
mm-hmm.
which I think is still there.
Yep, mm-hmm.
And then I went, there was another little school, Park School. Mm-hmm. I guess when I was in kindergarten, I went to Park School. And then,
mm-hmm.
then we moved to Old Mill.
Mm-hmm.
And then Edna McGuire, is that still there? Edna mm-hmm. McGuire School?
It's a primary school now.
Yeah.
They have the middle school now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And then on to Tam High.
And then Tam High, yeah. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the people that you remember.
Well, right off, I remember all the kind of unusual, quirky people, you know, like Charlie Deal and...
Talk about Charlie Deal.
Well, when I first met him, as kids, we were kind of scared of some of these characters because they were so kind of strange, you know. And then we all started to love him dearly later on, you know, because the quirkier the characters, the more interesting it was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a palate or cleft, something with his mouth that was, so you couldn't understand him real well. And then he got that fixed later on in his life, so then it was easier to understand him, you know.
Is he the creator of the toilet seat guitar?
He's the creator of the toilet seat guitar, yeah.
One thing I want to mention that I know about because of the property is that you come from a musical family, correct?
Right, yeah.
And that, why don't you talk a little bit about the music that was created at your family home? As I recall, there were performances out in the yard.
Yeah, we, but mostly we played out for parties and different things, but my mom and dad played Hawaiian music. My mom was going to be a, she wanted to be an opera singer. She played classical piano and stuff. And then when she met my dad, he said, why don't you learn guitar and back me up? I don't know how he talked her into playing Hawaiian music, but anyway. And dad, I guess, had, he just liked the sound of the Hawaiian steel guitar, and he took lessons from a guy named Sol Bright, who was a pretty famous Hawaiian steel guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, and then mom started learning guitar and sang, and she was a consummate performer because she was absolutely had no fear of audiences at all, you know.
Uh-huh.
She was just, hey everybody, how you doing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was great, you know. And then I started playing because they wanted somebody to play bass.
In your family band?
Yeah. And I think I started playing bass on the four bottom strings of a regular guitar. And then when I got into school, I took up string bass in the orchestra and learned string bass a little bit, and then gravitated eventually to electric. And then my two sisters did hula dance. So they danced and we played.
And did they sing as well?
Pardon?
Did they sing as well?
My sisters? Not really at that time. No.
So you performed at gigs as
Yeah.
a family.
Yeah.
And then
Yeah, and we
you.
used to play the Boyle Park Lions Club picnic every year, I remember, down there.
Any other local venues?
Well, then I start getting into the rock and roll years, you know. I start thinking of, because mostly my parents played, they played some public things like that, like probably played at the Outdoor Art Club and various things, Marin Art and Garden Center, things like that. But more often than not, we were playing for private parties and things, you know. So.
So I have to say that one of the reasons why we're sitting here today is because Huey Lewis said I should, the performer Huey Lewis said I should interview you. So let's go into the 60s, would it be the 70s when you were playing rock and roll?
Yeah.
And maybe we could talk a little bit about the people you played with and.
Well, how I got started really with that, and I brought you a thing that I had written after my friend John Cipollina passed away. And this was my recollections of John Cipollina. And he lived right down the hill from us, right down on Shady Lane. And his sister Antonia still lives there. She lives in the house right down below and teaches piano. And but John was a couple of years older than me, and this it tells the story in here, but he came up one day and I was in my Zorro costume, right, as a little boy, you know. And he had a real sword and he was chasing me around and I was scared to death. I ran in the car and locked the doors, you know. But then, ironically, I don't know exactly how it all came about, but we became great friends. And he was the first person that really introduced me to blues records and stuff. And he came up and played me some Lightnin' Hopkins and Muddy Waters and different things.
He came up to your house here and
Yeah.
wasn't his father a music teacher at TAM or something?
No, he was a real estate guy or something. I remember Bob Greenwood was the great music teacher at TAM High, but that's a different, yeah,
So
different
the
thing.
Cipollino family, I think, are there, is, was he the only musician in the family or did there.
His mom played piano and taught piano her whole life, and then Antonia is teaching piano to this day. So yeah. But he was the only kind of pop rock guy, you know. I think Antonia dabbled in it for a little while, but wasn't really her thing, you know. So,
So when you say pop rock, maybe you can talk about John Cipollina and your affiliation with his bands.
well, as I say, he kind of turned me on to blues, and when I first heard it, I was like, this guy is all out of tune. He doesn't know, you know. I was like very critical, and then after a while, I was buying every darn blues record I could get my hands
And this is what year?
on. Well, let's see. It must have been around the 59, 60s, right when we moved up here, pretty much.
Oh, so you're really just a kid.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, and we formed a band called the Deacons, and with John Cipollina and me, and there was a little person. There's a picture of us. There's playing at Boyle Park, and it was with Charlie Deal and me and John and Bob Bergen, who was a midget who played drums. Mm-hmm. And often wonder what became of him, but haven't seen him for years. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we played with that Deacon's band, but it was mostly doing blues and maybe some old rock and roll at the time, old 50s rock and roll and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I went on and joined another band that was doing more ventures and kind of instrumental music and stuff. And then I formed my own band with Bill Champlin, and that's was called The Office at Six, and that's where we started backing different touring artists that were coming through Marin, you know. So I got to play behind the Righteous Brothers and Dick and Dee Dee and the Dovells and all these, the Coasters, all these people that were touring through at the time. Mm-hmm. And so that was quite a thing as kids to be able to do that.
How old are you?
Well, we were in high school then, so it was,
wow,
you know.
Wow.
Yeah. And Bill Champlin told me that years later he ran into Bill Medley, and Bill Medley actually remembered doing that gig with us because he said none of the bands knew the material as well. He said when they first walked in and saw all these kids, they were like, oh no, what's this going to be, you know? But we had meticulously learned all the songs that they had on their albums, so we played them exactly the way they wanted.
The Righteous Brothers.
And they were kind of blown away. And Bill Medley evidently actually remembered that, which is pretty, that's pretty neat, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was the name of your band that you had, your own band?
The Opposite Six.
The Opposite Six.
Yeah.
And so, did you ever rejoin a band with John again, Cipollina?
No, strangely enough, I didn't, and I kind of, in some ways, wish I had, you know. But after the Office at Six broke up, I had to, I joined the Navy because my number was coming up. The draft was happening then, and my number was coming up, so I joined the Navy. Then Bill Champlin went on and formed Sons of Champlin, which mm-hmm. became pretty popular around Marin, and they're still playing mm-hmm. here and there now.
He's still around?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he moved to L.A. and joined Chicago in the, I guess, late 70s, early 80s. Mm-hmm. And wrote some hit songs and did real well. Mm-hmm. Had a lot of success in the music thing. Mm-hmm. And I came back from the Navy and joined up with Cold Blood, which was a rhythm and blues band with Lydia Pence and Cold Blood, mm-hmm. and got to play the Fillmore and the Avalon and all the haunts around here, and you know, so
what
that was
the,
a lot of fun.
Some of the more popular songs of Cold Blood? I remember the name, but I don't.
You know, most of her things were cover tunes. You know, she did a version of You Got Me Hummin', and she did I Just Want to Make Love to You, and she did, you know, kind of blues oriented, but we did it more in an R&B mm-hmm. kind of soul vein because we had a horn section in the whole nine yards. And she's still performing today too, which is interesting.
And John Cipollina, what happened to him?
I just remember getting back from the Navy and walking in and seeing John's huge guitar setup because things had changed radically in a couple of years. All of a sudden, they were making great big amplifiers and big equipment, you know. And I remember opening for his band, which he started Quicksilver Messenger Service then, mm-hmm. And I remember opening for him at the Fillmore and with Cold Blood. And I was up there playing, and all of a sudden John walks in and just walks right in front of the stage and waves at me, you know. And I hadn't seen him, I don't think, for years. That, you know, that was the first time I had seen him. I went, wow.
While you're playing, he's waving.
Yeah. And so it kind of came around in that way. But why I never played with John again, probably because I went off into the kind of the soul and funk band part of it, and John was more into the blues and rock thing, you know. So it might have just been a difference in styles of what we liked as kids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fun to, you know, re-hook up just playing on the same bills and everything.
All those years later.
Yeah.
But he died pretty young, didn't he?
Yeah, because he had always had lung problems, and I think he had, I don't know if it's emphysema or something. He's always had problems with that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, all our years of smoking dope and all that. I wasn't much of a dope smoker, but there was a lot of that going on, that's
mm-hmm.
for sure.
Mm-hmm.
That certainly didn't help matters any either if you have lung problems.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's ultimately what took him out. What was really weird, though, is that later on, I ended up moving to Seattle, Washington, and I heard one day that John was coming through with his band at that time, way past Quicksilver. He had this band called the Dinosaurs, which was a bunch of old guys still playing the blues and rock and roll. And I you know, took my card backstage, and he said, oh, come on back, you know. And I ended up singing a song with him or doing something on stage. And then he invited us to come back to his hotel after the gig. And I was a little reticent, you know. I went, oh, God, you know, he probably needs some rest. And my friends that I was with said, it sounded like he really wanted you to come. I said, well, okay, you know. So we go over there, and we, of course, stay up talking all night long.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an amazing historian. He was telling me all this history of the Catholic Church and this and that and all these things. I was like, wow, that guy. Stuff that I never knew about John, you know,
mm-hmm.
because we'd crossed paths through the years, but we really had gone our separate ways, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And but what was so ironic about the thing is, then about a few months later, I just got this feeling that I should call him, you know. So I call him up, and we had a great conversation. Two days later, he died. It was almost like, wow. I mean, all those years, I never talked to him that much,
mm-hmm.
you know. And then just all of a sudden, I happened to, out of the blue, think, I've got to call John. And then he dies 2 days later. And I went, wow, it was almost like it was meant to be that I was supposed to talk to him. You
mm-hmm.
know?
Interesting.
Pretty weird.
Yeah. How old was he when he died?
You know, I'm not really sure. I'd have to look it up.
How old were you when you called him? Do you remember? And you can be vague.
Yeah, I'm not real sure. I must have been, let's see, I bet you I was in my mid-40s or something.
Mm-hmm.
I would think, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So who were some of the other people you performed with or knew in the area that...
You know, can I go back a little bit?
Sure.
Well...
Just give us time we're going back to. That helps us keep
Well, I'm thinking when I was growing up in Mel Valley, the first rock and roll band I ever saw was called the Ramrods. And that was with another guy who lived right down the hill named Bob Albochton, and he played keyboards. And there was another band at the time that was actually before them, I guess, that I don't think I ever got to see, called the Custom Keys. And they played downtown in the what's now where the it was a bus depot. Mm-hmm. It's a book depot now or something. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I'd ever seen any rock and roll bands or mm-hmm. any rock and roll. And I was like, oh, that's what I want to do, you know. And then when I hooked up with John later on, there were some venues down here that aren't here anymore. There was a place called Brown's Hall, and it was now it's a Buddhist temple or something.
You mean there. The old mill that right near across? God, I've got to update everything. To the left of D'Angelo's restaurant, where it used to be Old Brown's store. Is that it, or is it?
It was right up about a block from the 2 a.m. club.
Do you know where that is? Oh, yes, I know. Okay, and so I'm not aware of it.
In between the 2 a.m. club and that where Whole Foods is now.
Uh-huh, okay.
And it's
Right, the Buddhist. Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I'd love to go in there sometime. Maybe I'll have to go to one of their yoga nights or something just to see that place, you know. But I'd really be curious if they still have a stage and if it looks the same inside that place. Mm-hmm. But that used to be our rock and roll place. And my mom would drive me down there when I was 15 years old and pick me up after the gig. And that's what one of the first places I remember playing. Brown's Hall and the Outdoor Art Club down mm-hmm. there were the mm-hmm. two venues where I played with John Cipollina.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then when I started my own band with the Opposite Six, it was mostly the Corte Madera Recreation Center because mm-hmm. we knew this guy named Ed Margoliash, and he was a local promoter, and somehow he had managed to contact all these touring acts that were coming through, as I say, like the Righteous Brothers. And he would hire us to be the backup band. And now, how he made all those contacts in that day and age, I have no idea. But
I guess he let his fingers do the walking.
Yeah.
Picked up the phone.
I guess so.
Yeah. That's how they used to do it back then.
And I don't know if they have any events at that Corte Madera Rec
Center
anymore.
Still young bands play there.
They do?
Yes. Mm-hmm. At least they have. I went probably 10 years ago. So.
Wow.
I suspect, yes.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. So, as things progressed, you said you went to Seattle, but you're playing music in the 60s here locally.
Yeah.
And into the 70s, I mean, how do you know Huey? He was more of a 70s band.
Who was that?
Huey Lewis, who told me I should interview
him. Huey was in a band called Clover.
I remember.
And I didn't know him real well, but I knew of him, and we were acquaintances, I guess you'd say, you know. Mm-hmm. And then later on, he started Huey in the News.
Did you ever play with Clover or Open or
no? We played on the same bills. Mm-hmm. I'm not even sure who I might have been playing with at that time, but yeah, because mm-hmm. they had a place in San Rafael called the Lion's Share. It was a club that had rock bands, and,
mm-hmm.
so, and that's where I remember seeing Huey a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike Finnegan, who was a keyboard player that became pretty well known and played with everybody. There were quite a few little Marin people that, you know, ended up moving on and hooking up with various pretty well known.
Did you remember some of the San Francisco performers, Janis Joplin and Grateful Dead folk and every people that have lived over in this area?
I I met Janice. I didn't really know her, you know, but I met her. And Cold Blood was opening for her. I'm not sure where that gig was, but it was in some big Grange Hall or something, I forget. But anyway, I remember opening for her, and she was all freaked out about Lydia, because Lydia was a really good singer in our band, and she was like, oh, she's blowing me off the stage. Little did she know that her charisma and her who she was, you know, was going to make her so big, you know. So, you know, it wasn't necessarily about who had the best voice or something, or the best whatever, you know. It was more about her as a person, which I think is really what the whole thing is about, usually anyway, you know. And when I look back on it now, I go, you know, it was the people like John Cipollina who were real individualists. You know, they had a style and a thing all of their own. They weren't necessarily the best players. You know, they might have been or might not have been, you know, but that wasn't really as important as it was of who that person was as a personality, you know. Because whenever you'd see John play, he was unique, you know. You'd know he was.
In what way?
Just his whole look, the way he played, he didn't really play like anyone else I can think of. I mean, he borrowed from all the great blues players and the, you know, but his style was pretty unique, what he came up with, you know. And because I think early on I was looking to play with the best players around. But now, as an old man, I look back and I go, you know what? When you use that term best, you've got to be very careful, you know, because somebody might have a lot of technique and chops, but they may not have the style and personality of the little guy that just learned, you know, by playing in bands on the street or whatever, you know. And those are the people you remember, I think, you know. Those are the people that go on to have a lot of success sometimes. I mean, there's very few people that just make it, like a Celine Dion on their voice, or what was her name, Whitney Houston. There's very few of those people, you know. Most of the people are like Mick Jagger, who probably wouldn't even, you know, if he went on American Idol, they would have said, keep your day gig. You don't have a good enough voice to be, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So looking back now, I find it all real interesting, you know. The quirky people are the ones who, and that's what I remember about Mill Valley again, you know. There was a guy, a little guy that used to walk down the way, and I remember as kids, we were kind of scared of him. His name was George, I forget his last name. But he was mentally ill. I'm not sure what his mental illness was, but he always would want to say hello to you. And so he would make it a point to cross the street. If we were walking down the street, he would walk across, and he would shake your hand, and he would say, it's a nice day, and he would hold on to your hand, you know, and wouldn't let go, you know. And as kids, we were kind of afraid of him. And then we got to realize that he was a sweetheart of a guy. He was just a little mentally ill guy that wanted to say hello to you, you know. And now I wonder, whatever happened to him? What, who, you know, see, as an old man, I guess that's where things change. You start wondering, what was that guy really about, you know? I mean, as a kid, you're kind of protective and a little fearful, you know. Now I'm going, what was his, you know, illness? Where did he live? How did he take care of himself? You know, somebody in Mill Valley may know the answers to that. I would love to know, you know. But, but you know, those are the kinds of the people that I remember, you know, the kind of unusual people, you know, that were in Mill Valley at the time, you know.
Who else?
Huh?
Who else do you remember?
Well, of course, Charlie, you know, as I had already mentioned. Being up on the hill here, as I say, we're fairly secluded, so probably the people I remember after that would have been more my high school friends, because I went to school, to high school, with George Duke, who was in my orchestra class, and he, of course, became a very famous producer and musician, and he passed away a couple of years ago. But lots of memories of, George and some of the, my high school friends,
And I saw you at Charlie Kelly's, the bike guy at his first. Did you know Charlie in school too?
And Charlie was the road manager for Sons of Champlin, so that's how I really got to know Charlie pretty well. And his story was real interesting because he, in high school, he and I, were kind of the, like, my dad was very athletic and stuff. I was the opposite. I was not good at sports, and Charlie Kelly wasn't either. He was kind of klutzy, and and then he went on and formed that motor, I mean that
Fat Tire.
mountain bike thing, and became one of the leading mountain bikers. And it's almost like, he took that early thing to heart and went on to become a great athlete. Isn't that interesting? I mean, it's really interesting what people have done with their lives, where they went,
Like he wrote, we bought his book, Fat Tires, and he writes inside to my husband, write it like you stole it.
Oh, wow. That's funny.
So, how about we talk a little bit about how you see the area changing as you know, from the town you lived in to
I have, a lot of kind of negative feelings about that, and that's why I'm really glad I come up here today, because now I'm seeing the positive, and that's good for me. I needed to see that, because I guess my regret is, as big money moved into this area, all of the original residents pretty much have moved out. There's very few left, and almost all of them moved out because they couldn't afford to be here anymore, so that's the sad part of it, I guess, but
Including yourself?
But I'm not any less happy. I'm probably happier now than I was when I was here. So it's not necessarily where you live or, that's gonna bring you any happiness or whatever in your life, So it's all been good, I guess, when I look back on it now. I mean, I've lived in a lot of different places, I think the thing is, I think about like Mill Valley used to have just a little hardware store there, Varney's Hardware, and the bus depot was a bus depot. Now it's a book place, and the little stores are now boutiques and coffee shops or something like that. Now, maybe I shouldn't be putting a positive or negative connotation on that. It's just change. It's just change, that's all, but I guess, in a way, see, I start thinking about the Walmarts and the big corporations that have taken everything over, and I get kind of sad about that because I wish it was the mom and pop stores again or something. All of our jobs have gone overseas and blah blah blah. You know, I guess the little hometown feeling is gone pretty much, you know. But then people like you are keeping it alive because you still have a heart. So.
Thank you. But you provided us with some of your writing here, and you write a little bit about your father's land or your grandparents' land.
Yeah.
Maybe you could talk about what happened. I haven't read the article, but.
Well, as I say, when my grandfather moved to Marin, he bought this property in Tiburon up by the church there and built his little house, you mm-hmm. know. And that was the only house on that hillside, and he owned that entire hillside. Well, then when my grandfather died, my grandmother and my aunt didn't keep up the property taxes on the house. And by the time my dad heard about it, it was kind of too late. They had to sell off some of that property to pay the taxes. And so they sold that entire piece of property up there, that whole hillside, for something like $500,000. And the guy who bought it subdivided into 8 parcels and sold each parcel for $1 million. And it was like, I guess, the talk of the town, of the real estate community, you know. And somehow my aunt managed to keep the life estate, so she had her little piece of property left, you know. And, but that was all. So it was all these million-dollar mansions now around this old ramshackle house that was falling apart, you know.
Did she have electricity?
Yeah.
She did.
But, see, here again are the pros and cons of the thing. She had her own spring water. There's a spring there mm-hmm. that gave her fresh water year-round. The city made her hook up to the city water. And now that spring is just running down the hillside. You know, it's just wasted. Now, to me, that was a travesty. You know, it never should have happened. But that's, you know, things like that.
Right? So she passed away probably in the 90s, 1990s?
Yeah.
So do you have the land still?
A what?
Did you still have... Do you occupy the land? I mean, or do you...
We finally had to move her into a rest home because mm-hmm. her health was getting so bad. And then she kept telling us her whole life she wanted us to inherit her property. But she had never signed any wills or anything that we finally went, well, you know, if you really want us to have this, then you need to put it in a trust to us or something. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I'll do that. And then she wouldn't. Mm-hmm. The time would go by. And we finally said, look, Vera, we don't care. You know, I mean, if you don't have to give it to us. There's nothing saying you need to give us your property. But if that indeed is your wish, then you need to. And we finally managed to get the trusts and everything. And then when she was in ill health, we couldn't afford to take care of her. So we decided to try to find an income property to so that we could pay all the bills, you know.
Rent's not high enough on a ramshackle place, huh?
No, and I went down and looked at, because I did carpentry most of my life, you know, and I realized to fix that place up, it just didn't make sense. It would have been more money than it was worth, you know. So we finally decided we had to sell it and look, and then we looked around Marin and you couldn't find a doghouse for the amount of money we had, you know what I mean? So... We finally ended up finding this old resort up in Napa that where we're living now mm-hmm. that had cabins on it that we could rent out. And mm-hmm. that's why we bought that place, so we could take care of my aunt. And then when she finally passed away, then we inherited the...
And so that's where you and your two sisters live?
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's kind of nice.
So it actually worked out fine, although you could say, well, we lost the piece of property overlooking the San Francisco Bay, you know, up in the beautiful hills of Tiburon. But then again, see, that I look at that and I go, yeah, but they haven't improved the road, the two-lane road coming into that place in 100 years or whatever it's been. And now that it's wall-to-wall Mercedes inching their way in and out of that place in commuter traffic every day, and then go up to, yeah, it's a big mansion, but it's wall-to-wall mansions around you. I go, well, would I really want to live there? No, not really. I don't think so. I think we had the best of it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that's where you have to weigh, you know, the good and the bad, or
and
progress.
Change and progress and all these concepts that are rolling around.
Yeah. So I'm not sure that it was, you know, as I say, it's a beautiful area, but man, it's so populated and hard to get into. And I don't know. I mean, I guess if I had tons of money, maybe I would, but I don't know. Would I be any happier? Probably not. You know, I'm happy where I am, you know.
How about if you were to think about what it is, that the part that affected, you know, living in Mill Valley, what it gave to you, you know, as part of your personal growth and experience?
Well, I don't know if we knew how good we had it up here, for one thing. You know, as kids, I think we took everything pretty much for granted. We didn't, you know. And, you know, one of the things I remember, this is my kind of drifting off a little bit, but as when we were playing music, we used to listen to the black station in Oakland called KDIA.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of our guru music, you know, teacher, you know. And years later, I remember, because let me backtrack a little bit. I had told you that I grew up knowing George Duke, and there was a we used to back up a couple of different black singers. There were quite a few different people that I remember that we backed up as the Office at Six that were local. But I don't think I knew really how segregated this area really was, because George Duke lived down in Marin City, which was a whole black community that I guess had been built there as a ship.
They built near Marin City in, I believe, 3 months when they had stalled the shipyard during World War II to house the workers that were coming from the south to work building the ships.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then that became a black, you know, community. And when I think back on it, I never was in George Duke's house, and he was never in mine, and I regret that. Now, as an old man, I go, how did that ever happen? When we were great friends, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it was just an unwritten word, or, you know, I don't think I knew how segregated we really were, you know? Because
mm-hmm.
we were pretty lucky to live up here in House on the Hill, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I had any concept of that as a kid, you know. And so one day in my later years, before KDIA finally went off the air, I was visiting down in the area. I had already moved to Seattle, and I was visiting down here. And the first thing I would do whenever I came to the area is turn on KDIA, you know. And so I hear the guy says, the KDIA welcome, or their some kind of truck, you know, their wagon, was coming around giving out albums, and they were going to be in Corte Madera, I went, oh my gosh, you know. So I go running down there in my car. By the took me all of 10 minutes maybe to get there, right, or 15. By the time I got there, they had already gone because nobody was there. And that's where it hit me of how segregated we really were. I went, there were no soul music fans in Marin. They were in Oakland then. You know what I mean? So that hit me like a ton of bricks. And I guess it made me realize how naive, I guess, we really were growing up in Mill Valley. You know, because in a way, I mean, my family was far from rich. We weren't rich at all, you know. But we lived like we were rich, I guess. And at that time, you could afford to be up here on not that much money. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, as you're finding out, you know, you have to have quite a bit of money now to just to survive around here.
Yeah, finding alternative ways to survive.
Yeah.
'Cause it's...
So, but I guess, you know, again, it, for me to put a judgment on that and say that that's good or bad, I guess you can't really do that, you know.
That's hindsight will show us.
Yeah.
Well, this has been so interesting, and I hope we've covered enough of your experience, but I always close with this one question. Is there one question I haven't asked that you wish I had?
Let me think about that a minute.
Something we haven't talked about that you'd like to close with.
I think, in a way, you're carrying on already what I would have wanted.
There you go.
And that's just that people will take care of the area and the people. In the area. And I think you're doing a better job of that than maybe I would have done. So much appreciated. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Rob, for your time and for your interview. I really, really enjoyed it.